Hello, this is Lori Atkins. I'm the interviewer. We are at South Texas Archives at the Jernigan Library at Texas A&M University, Kingsville. And this is part of the Common Heritage Grant that we got through the endowment, National Endowment for the Humanities Grant. And we are here to interview Cynthia Quintanilla. And she's also part of the Alvarez family, and we're going to talk about her family here in Kingsville. So if you'll please state your name.
Certainly. My name is Cynthia Quintanilla.
And your birthplace?
Kingsville, Texas, in October 7th, 1955.
Okay, great, great. Well, we can start. And you've provided a wonderful outline that we can talk about. So you start with who you'd like to.
Okay. Well, my father was Francisco Alvarez Quintanilla Jr. He was born in 1905. He comes from a long line of Quintanillas from the north of Spain in a small town. Burgos is the name of the town. And I've never been there yet. I was in Spain in 2014, but didn't make it to that part of the country. But I will one day, God willing. Sebastian Quintanilla, and I am sorry that at this moment, I know I have the date that he came and was part of forming Kingsville, but I didn't take it out and put it right here in front of me. But Sebastian would be in English. Sebastian Quintanilla left Spain, sailed on a ship, landed in Mexico. And whatever the year was in the 1800s when Captain King brought the people from that little community in Mexico. He ended up bringing the whole town. Great. Sebastian Quintanilla was one of those that came. He was supposedly an excellent horseman. And of course, Captain King was going to need specialized people with all his cattle and his horses that he was going to turn into thoroughbreds. And of course, the rest is history, because he did. But again, going back to my father, Francisco Alvarez Quintanilla, he was born in Santa Cruz Ranch, which is near Rivera. It was also called Radiche. I have flashes of memories as a child that there was a type of reunion of some of the people, family members, and it's very near to, before you get to the little community of Rivera, but now it's another name. It's a Spanish name. I don't know the name of the ranch. The people who bought it, the King Ranch ended up selling that division.
Okay.
You know how they have the different divisions, Noria, San Gertrudis Division, Laureles. They ended up selling Santa Cruz. So my father's family, they all moved to Laureles when he was 11 years old, and that was in 1916. Laureles is another division, which is I think closer to Corpus, actually, than closer to Kingsville. And my father would tell me that he worked during the day at the ranch, went to school at night on the ranch. They had their own school. And I can show you a picture of some of the men who built the school. My grandfather was one of them. Anyway, my father told me the teacher that came to teach them at night drove a Model T.
Oh my.
And if he told me the name, I do not remember. But he said he came from Alice, Texas. And I'm sorry, at the moment I can't find the picture of all the men. My grandfather and some of his brothers were the ones who built the school in Laureles, which has since been torn down.
So when your grandfather came with his brother, so his entire family came to the King Ranch to work. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have any idea how many were in that family?
Quite a few. Oh, gosh, because he had so many brothers. This was my grandfather. This is not Sebastian.
Okay.
But this is Francisco Quintanilla Sr. Anyway, that's a very good question, and I'm sorry that I can't answer that.
Well,
I don't know exactly how many came.
Okay.
When we're done here, I'm going to give you the name of a cousin of mine.
Okay.
His father and my father were brothers. He is a retired principal in Brownsville. He can tell you tons more than I know because he is an expert at genealogy and at our family. So when this is over, I'll give you his name.
Okay.
He's, like I said, he's retired and he really doesn't come to Kingsville very often. He spends the winter times here in Brownsville, where he lives, and then in the summertime he goes to Wisconsin, where his wife is from.
Very nice.
Must be. Anyway, my father worked as a young boy on the ranch, and like I said, the teacher came from Alice and drove a Model T, and eventually, I mean, my father did not graduate from school. His education was limited. I'm talking about a formal education that was limited. Eventually, he grew up to continue working on the ranch. He worked with horses. That was his, I guess you could say, specialty or one of them. He was also a very good baseball player, but we'll get that. Take me out to the ball game. We'll get that to that in a little while. Right now, we're going to be off to the races. There's a picture of him at Belmont Racetrack. Well, you're going to make copies. This is the one he sent this to, one of his sisters here. This is the only one that we could find. There's another one where he's actually up in the stadium at Belmont, because that's where the horses would go by train.
Wow.
They would load him up a train here, and he would actually, he told me, because he felt that, well, actually, he was in charge of the horses, so he had to be very careful that nobody would attempt to inject them with anything, as was known to happen, not necessarily with these horses from the King Ranch, but any horses at any race.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go to Santa Anita in California and Belmont Racetrack in New York.
Wow.
And that's where he was a lot. And this picture was from Belmont. I guess he felt like he had to put on his suit and tie for that one. Because that's not
picture.
How he normally dressed to be on the racetrack with the horses. He would actually sleep in the stables at Belmont with the horses because he feared that someone would try to sabotage.
I guess the King Ranch had quite a program for thoroughbreds and for racehorses at that time.
They did, yes.
They won the Triple Crown, I remember.
Yes, and Assault was a very, very, famous horse of theirs. And, you'll scan those pictures later. Belmont Racetrack was where he spent a lot of time. And he, like I said, he slept in the stables with the horses because he felt like, this is my job.
Mm-hmm.
My job is on the line here. I have to defend these horses and make sure that no one tries to inject them with anything. I don't know what kind of drugs they would use to either make them, I guess, speed up.
Right.
Or maybe to make them feel very lethargic. I don't know, but he took his job seriously, and he took it so seriously. Meanwhile, back at the ranch here in Kingsville, I don't know if you know this, the Javelina Stadium?
Right.
That was the stables for the thoroughbreds. That's where they had the stables.
I did not know that.
A lot of people don't. Okay. But then a lot of people do, because I've heard people. That's why when I was growing up, I loved hearing stories, because I love history. And it's part of my mm-hmm. heritage. And I wanted to be able to share these stories. And a lot of my cousins are in awe. A lot of my older cousins, they're like, where did you hear that from? Why didn't I hear this? And I would tell them, because you were too interested in girls or too interested in boys. And y'all were a lot older than me. You were teenagers during that time. And I was a little girl. So I would sit around and listen to all the stories. But at the Thoroughbred Stables, which is where Javelina Stadium is now, my father was in charge and would spend the night there in the stables. He was very, very close friends with Jim Scarborough. I believe it was the first one, because there were three Jim Scarboroughs.
Okay.
Father, son, and grandson. They were all sheriff at one time in Kingsville, Claiborne County. My father was allowed to sleep at the stables with his handgun for protection.
Good. Great.
Okay. One morning, he woke up and decided, I need my coffee. So he walked to town to meet the sheriff, Jim Scarborough. Forgot all about the holster, forgot all about the guns. Nobody said anything until he walked in. I don't know which little cafe it was. And Jim Scarborough, the sheriff, looked up and said, Pancho, las pistolas. He spoke fluent Spanish, apparently, which means Pancho is a nickname for Frank, Francisco. Las pistolas, the guns. Pistola is gun. So that was how he got his nickname, Pancho Pistola.
Oh, that's great.
Pancho Pistolas. And that carried on when he was coach for the semi-professional team called the Cowboys. And in fact, in the picture, it says Francisco Pancho Pistola Quintanilla.
And which one is he?
My father.
That
was
one
short,
on the end. Oh,
right there.
That's
and
great.
Very young. I heard he was a looker. Most of these, you will see, pardon me, a lot of Quintanillas and Mendietas.
Yes.
All my cousins. They were a semi-professional team. It was awesome.
I've heard that before.
Okay. I don't know which one was Johnny Pinchback. There were two African-American local boys who were so good that they were allowed to be on the team. It wasn't just exclusive to people who lived on the ranch, but you had to be very good to get on their team. They were semi-pro. And a lot of them lived in town.
Did they travel and play other teams?
Yes. Oh, I wasn't born yet. Because this was before my time.
Okay.
Remember, I was born in 55. Yes, I'm old, okay?
The same year I was born.
Well, then we're not old. We're not old. I take it back. Okay. they traveled to, my parents would say, I know that my mother would talk about how much, there was 5 years they were married before I came along. And we were a family of yours, mine, and ours.
Okay.
I'm the ours. And she said it was so much fun. She would speak with so much passion. She said it was so much fun to travel, you know, and to go see this team. They would play in Brownsville. They would play in all areas. As far as I know, just in Texas, but it might have been other places. I don't know other places. I can't remember what other places she mentioned, but I remember that she said it was just so much fun, and she was so proud of my father because he had so much fun. He was an awesome baseball player, too. Brooklyn Dodgers, Don Newcomb, who is still living. According to the internet, he's 90 years old.
Wow.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you could talk to him?
Yes.
I would love to talk to him. He agreed when he was stationed at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, he agreed to come and do an exhibition game. Well, keep in mind, this must have been probably 1940s.
Okay.
Racism. Segregation.
Right.
I know that my parents used to tell me that they always felt like, in their opinion, Kingsville just wanted to get on the bandwagon and to be like other towns, that they would hear about a lot of racism. But my parents did say that, sadly, there were a lot of places that said, blacks, go to the back. They had to be served in the back.
Okay.
Well, I always asked, well, where did we fit in? She said we were considered white, because there is no race that's called the Hispanic race. Mm-hmm. I think it's just you're either black or white or Asian or, you know, whatever. So I said, how sad was that? And she said, yes, it was. My mother, she said, I think that they just wanted to kind of, I think it was like getting on the bandwagon with the rest of the country, I think was all it was. She said, because it really didn't make sense, because this town was built by Hispanics.
Right.
Anglos. Blacks coming in with the railroad, you know, that's why all the houses here on
the west side,
east and west side,
yes,
real close to the tracks, were built. They were, you know, new, very unique, uniquely built homes. Some of them still have really nice fireplaces.
Yes,
you know, because they were built during that time of the railroad. But with Don Newcomb, it was happy. But it was a little sad, too. It's kind of bittersweet, the story that I heard from my parents repeatedly growing up. There is that building that still is standing today on the corner of 7th and East Richard Street. From what I understand, it's a really run-down.
I know which building you're talking about.
It's called Day and Night.
Okay.
It's like a bar, I guess.
Yes.
Well, in those days, it was a swanky place. My mother said the women would dress beautifully with their corsage, wearing, and the men would dress up. Now, the patio, that's what it was called, el patio, which means the patio. The dance floor did not have a roof, but it was like almost like a fortress with the bricks. Inside, was, my father worked there on the weekends as a busboy. And the inside was, you could order, you know, food. I'm not saying it was elaborate food, but mm-hmm. it was, you could order your food to eat. And then if you wanted to dance on, I guess, just the weekends, that's when my mother said everybody would go so dressed up. She said it was awesome because everybody was so elegant mm-hmm. dancing. Well, they decided to have a really big celebration for Don Newcomb there, but the black community was not invited.
Oh.
And I asked my mother why, and she said, I don't know why. It was a sign of the times.
Yes.
She said, right or wrong, I don't know. And I said, of course it was wrong. And she said, but we didn't do anything about it in those days. We didn't know any better. Well, a lot of the people in the black community wanted to get his autograph.
I'm sure.
They wanted to sign him. So they went to that place, stayed outside. My father and all the players grabbed tables and chairs and helped him stand on there. Remember, the dance floor had no ceiling, no roof, so that he could climb up to the top and reach down.
Oh.
And shake people's hand and sign their autographs.
That is kind of bittersweet.
It
but
is.
It's a good story.
Yes, it is. And I just, to this day, I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether to laugh or cry. But my mother would tell me, don't ask any more questions because I don't know how to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sign of the times.
Right.
That's the way it was. Good or bad, that's the way it was everywhere, she said. It wasn't so much for the Hispanics here, but there was a lot of racism with the Hispanics also. She said, if it's not Hispanic or black, it was Irish in other places, or it was Germans or
Jewish or
yes. She said, it's always been that way throughout history. She said, read the Bible. And I would tell her, I will someday. And I do now.
Yes.
But along with Don Newcomb also, when he agreed to come, and he came in a chauffeured limousine to Kingsville. He was turned away from the swankiest hotel, which was called Casa Ricardo.
I remember seeing pictures of that hotel.
The building has been refurbished a lot. It's not an assisted living. It's apartments for elderly people.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
It's on the corner of Yoakum and Yoakum. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, 4th or 5th. I don't know. I think it's 4th Street. My father said that when he and Adan Munoz, because they were both managers, and my father was the coach of the team. Adan Munoz is one of his sons, used to be sheriff here for a long time, Adan Munoz Jr. That's another story. He lives in Austin now. Anyway, my father said that when they got to Casa Ricardo, they were expecting, you know, to be allowed to admit him.
Mm-hmm.
The person who was behind the desk there just said, there's no place for him here. My father asked him, would you give me the phone, please? So my father called Don Ricardo, Mr. Richard, Mr. Ricardo, and the ranch. And I don't know what was said. My father doesn't know what was said. He said, all Don Ricardo told me was, let me speak to the man. So my father handed him the phone, and the next thing you know, the best suite in the place.
He was checked in.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was a big thing for Kingsville when Brooklyn Dodgers Don Newcomb came to play the exhibition game, and that's all I remember about that.
It's a good story.
Bittersweet. I still think it was kind of sad. It might have been, who knows, it might have been a way to bring the community together.
Right.
But I don't know. But like my mother would tell me, don't ask any more questions. That's just the way it was. I think she got tired of me asking why. Why was it like that? She said, I don't know. That's just the way it was.
It gradually changed, though.
Yes. We still have a long ways to go.
True.
But we're getting there. Okay. You want me to go on?
Sure.
Keep going?
Okay. Please. This is good.
And I have my outline. I just kind of skipped a little bit. Not skip, but I mean I went from one to... Okay. I moved around a little bit, but...
So before we leave that exactly, so your grandfather was the co-manager of the Cowboys?
No, my father.
Your father was.
Yes.
Okay.
He was 50 years old when I was born.
Okay.
So when I was growing up, people thought he was my grandfather.
How many, you said yours, you know, you're a blended family. How many children in all did you grow up with?
Actually, I grew up alone.
Because, so you were the last.
Yes. By the time I was 5 years old, the others were either married or getting married.
Okay.
So if people would ask me, are you an only child? I would say yes.
It felt like that.
I would just say yes, because it felt like that, yes. I'm only 7 years older than my a nephew and 5 years older than a niece.
I see.
So it's like kind of like having a niece and nephew that are like a younger brother and sister. But the reason that I'm calling this Quintanilla / Alvarez family history, because the Alvarezes do come in on my grandmother's side. Francisco Sr. married Rita Alvarez, hence my father's name, Francisco Alvarez Quintanilla Jr.
Okay.
And the King Ranch Alvarez family, this is from a 1995 draft that my cousin, whose name I'm going to give you,
okay,
at the end of the interview, compiled this, and he helped David when David was about, I think, in seventh grade. David was doing a research at school.
Okay.
At on our family history and on genealogy, but there was a heroine named Francisca Alvarez,
okay,
who was known as the Angel of Goliad.
Yes, I've heard of her.
Well, I do have some articles from some of Bill Walraven's newspaper articles and some of the Texas history books, but my cousins, we have, all of us have, well, this is when I was the secretary of the organization. We have the AOGDHP, okay, which is the Angel of Goliad Descendants Historical Preservation. That's a mouthful. And, well, this was given to me in 2012. This is a likeness of her because there are no pictures of her. The state of Texas has helped us tremendously. We now have a statue dedicated to her in Goliad, and there's a little museum there. We're a nonprofit organization. Now, I have not been active as the secretary in about 2 years.
Okay.
I'm sure they've elected somebody else. I don't know who he or she is, but I'm sorry. I'm not meaning to forget you, Daniel. I apologize. You're just so quiet. But how we're related, David is the sixth descendant here.
Okay.
Of course, you can make copies of this if you want.
We would like to, please.
Certainly, because it started with, now, she took his name. We don't know why, because he was already married. Keep in mind, at this time, during these years, this was during, you know, the Alamo time,
right,
the Battle of Goliad. This was still Mexico.
Yes.
All of this was still Mexico. So all
this
we know is that
this was not unusual at all. I'm finding out through the archives of
people, misspelled?
No. People having several spouses.
Oh, okay. Well, see, one thing that we have tried with the state of Texas, our organization, the Angel of Goliad Descendants Historical Preservation, where we always wear those, we've been trying to get her name corrected.
Okay.
But, like, we're assuming not to put down anybody, but if you're non-Hispanic, you may not, if you hear the word Alvarez and then you have to spell it, you may not know. Yeah, it would be like pronouncing my last name. That's a mouthful, Quintanilla. Once I learned how to spell my last name, the rest of the alphabet was no problem. You know, and people will try to pronounce the double consonants, Illa, mm-hmm, Quintanilla. That's pretty obvious. You see it and you think that's the way it's pronounced. So we're assuming that her name is misspelled in a lot of places, and I will show you where. There's articles we have made copies of from Texas, a lot of Texas history books. Her name is misspelled.
Okay.
And after I retired, and I did teach at Academy High School for several years when they first opened up in the 90s. It was a long time ago. Then when I retired in 2010 from Kingsville ISD, I started substituting for Santa Gertrudis ISD and Kingsville ISD. When I was in a history class, I opened up the history book and found two sentences about the Angel of Goliad, and of course her name was misspelled. That's something that we've been trying for many years to change with the state of Texas, but it's like having to go through get an act of Congress to do that. It might be difficult because it's just I guess Sign of the Times, maybe, Alavés. A lot of people have her listed as Alavés.
Okay.
That's how, in the history books, his name, Colonel Telesforo Álvarez.
Okay.
All we know so far, and I haven't called my cousins recently, but I don't think they've uncovered any more information, because I think we would have to cross the border south of us to see if there's archives there that we could get into, because we know that she came from Monterrey.
Okay.
The reason, okay, I'll get to why she's called the Angel of Goliad in a minute. We do know that she met him on a ship. They sailed, I guess maybe from Monterrey. I'm not sure where she sailed from to end up near Brownsville.
Okay.
He was on his way to fight because, you know, there were Mexicans who fought also at the Alamo and Goliad who wanted to break away from Mexico, who wanted to be Texicans. Well, she joined up with him, and she was known as the Angel of Goliad, and there are historical documents that have been recorded by doctors, soldiers who fought and survived, and they taught about the beautiful lady who, maybe that's where I get my beauty from. I wonder. Wow, it just occurred to me. They talk about that lovely lady who helped them. And she pleaded. She didn't speak in English. She didn't speak English. She pleaded for their lives. She did certain things that she could, because she would go against the soldiers. She would loosen their ties if she could. I mean, their, I don't know if they're called mangles, or what would you, if someone is...
Shackled.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mangled. Cynthia, shackled. Mm-hmm. She would loosen them. She would heal their wounds. She would bring them water, bring them food. She would even sneak some out at night if she could. This book by Bill Walraven, The Magnificent Barbarians, Little Told Tales of the Texas Revolution. This is Bill Walraven. He used to write articles for the Corpus paper. And I'm sorry that I do not have the date here.
We can probably find it. No worries.
Okay. Well, just one quick paragraph here. My grandfather had, this is a cousin of mine speaking to Bill Walraven. My grandfather, Gerardo, had a sister, Rita Alvarez.
Okay.
My grandmother.
Rita Alvarez. Okay. I'm following on the...
My father's mother, who married a Quintanilla. She married Francisco Quintanilla Sr., and that union produced a lot of children, and one of those was a girl, not only my father,
okay,
but one of those was a girl named Tomasa Quintanilla. She married Lauro Cavazos Sr., so I'm sure you've heard of my cousin,
yes.
Dr. Lauro F. Cavazos, who was under the Bush administration's Secretary of Education. So, okay, anyway, my cousin Jerry, or Gerardo in Spanish, was giving the interview to Bill Walraven about her and the Alvarez and the Quintanillas and the Cavazos here in Kingsville. So you can make copies of these if
okay,
you want
good.
Later.
We
but,
will.
I'm sorry, my arms just aren't very...
No, you're
you know,
okay.
But you can see, I'm not leaving you out, Daniel.
No,
okay.
No.
Anyway, Colonel Telesforo Alvarez, I'm just going to say, had a union
right.
relationship with Francisca. We don't know what her name was. She took his name.
Okay.
Alvarez. They had a son named Matias. Matias married Felipa Mosqueda. They had several children. One was a daughter named Rita Alvarez. She married Francisco Quintanilla Sr. One of their many children was Francisco Quintanilla Jr. He married Luisa Garza. Now, she was his second wife.
Okay.
I do not remember the name of his first wife, and she's deceased, his first wife. But their union had Cynthia Quintanilla.
Okay.
Here I am. I married this man.
Okay.
This marriage produced two children, one of whom is David Flores, whom you know, and
okay.
you all know, and
yes.
he works here at the library. Number seven, David is in no hurry. Okay? Trying to get him married, but he doesn't seem to be in any hurry right now, so, okay.
Yes,
so this
time,
is
he's
yet,
young, yes.
This is yet to be filled.
Okay.
Okay, so other books are The Magnificent Barbarians, The Goliad Massacre, part of the Texas Revolution. Now, this is Our organization, the Angel of Goliad Descendants Historical Preservation, oof, that's a mouthful. We have our main meeting. We have a meeting twice a year. The main one is during the reenactment of the Goliad Massacre in Goliad, the last weekend of every March. We have our really big meeting there. We have a ceremony in the church there the next day, and then David, a few years ago, was chosen to by the organization to carry the wreath that we place, one wreath for her, another wreath at the graveside for Fannin, okay, and all the men that died. She's mentioned, very little of her is mentioned, it's highlighted, a Mexican woman named Alvarez interposed in this man's favor.
Okay.
There are some men. One of them was Abel Morgan. Another one was Reuben Brown. They left documents or accounts of how she helped them. And she later became known as the Angel of Goliad. They called her that because she was like a bright angel doing what she could to sneak these men out at night, to sneak food, to loosen their shackles, to help them in any way that she could. She was the wife of, well, see, the books say the wife
of the general,
but we haven't, of Telesforo Alvarez. But after the war, or the Battle of Goliad, when everything was said and done, he went back to Mexico without her. And
she stayed?
She stayed.
Did she remarry someone else that you're aware of?
Not that we're aware of. Okay.
These
I will say this.
Will give a lot of reference to your collection.
Yes. What I need to do, which I am going to someday, God willing, in fact, very soon, I'm going to get David to help me. We're going to buy. I want to buy these books instead of having just the copies. But I think some of my cousins have these books, but I'm sure David can find them on Amazon or Archive State of, maybe the library in Austin.
Sure.
I'm sure he can do that. Her part in the war, she obviously did quite a bit for all these accounts. I can't remember the name of the doctor who she helped. She helped nurse a lot of these men, and they left accounts. Men came from all over the United States to fight.
Yes, she's well
remembered.
Mexico's
independence, yes. And her final resting place, okay, I have no proof other than a phone call from my cousin, whose name I'm going to give you. I spoke on the phone to him a few years ago because it's been handed down, the story has been handed down through the years that Henrietta King, because Matias, I did show you Matias,
right,
Alvarez, who was a child of the union between Colonel Telesforo Alvarez and the Angel of Goliad, Panchita, I'll call her Panchita. Matias lived on the King Ranch.
She did.
And now he brought his mother. I don't know where she was in Texas, but the Angel of Goliad apparently was old, sick, and she was living on the ranch. Henrietta King, according to stories that have been handed down, okay, from, I have no actual paper proof other than a phone call, and I will tell you about that phone call in a minute. The stories that have been handed down from the generations are that Henrietta M. King wanted her buried in an unmarked grave on the ranch. I don't know why unmarked. I've questioned that in my mind and with other relatives throughout the years, and I can see the pros and cons of having her in an unmarked grave.
But
people have asked me, where is she? If you know, why don't you tell us? And I tell them, I have a flash of a memory in my brain because of what my cousin told me via telephone a few years ago. He described the French-style wrought iron gates that surround her gravesite. A light went off, and I said, I've seen that. I said, but I must have been very small because my father was with me, and there was a lot of grassy field. And I asked him, will you please tell me, and I will not share this with anyone, not even my son David, or either one of my sons, and he said, no. And I said, I respect that, because number one, it's private property.
Right, people can't go on it, but isn't
that the organization the Angel of Goliad descendants, have been wanting to for years be able to know where, this is what they say, they want to know where on the ranch, the King Ranch, it's at, so that they can go and pay homage.
Right.
Lay a wreath. And I've said, I wouldn't appreciate that if she was buried on my property. Because you don't know, that's going to open a door. It might possibly open a door to tourism.
Right.
Might open a door to, look what happened to the late comedian Charlie Chaplin.
Mm-hmm.
Many years ago, not to mention others. His remains were stolen and held for ransom.
Right.
Yes. I said, I wouldn't want that. And besides, this is private property. So I had that memory deep in my brain with my father beside me, and I don't know if that was what my cousin was talking about, but it was funny because that light bulb went off and I thought, oh my gosh, I can see the wrought iron
so
gates.
They did mark it in some sort of way, maybe not the actual grave, but
and I never asked my father because I didn't even remember that.
Right.
It wasn't until a few years ago, and even then, when my father died in 2001, I just didn't even think about it. It just didn't seem significant at the time. But because then when I got into the organization, a nonprofit organization with the rest of the family members, I thought, wow. But then I wonder, I ask myself, did my father know? Is that why he took me there? I don't know whose gravesite we were seeing. I don't remember. But
do the history books ever mention burial place?
I've never seen that information. This is just something that's been handed through the family, but I've never seen it. And that's a good question, because that would give me, now I have some research to do. Perhaps. One never knows.
We do have some other information in the archives about the Angel of Goliad. Now you're piquing my interest.
Well, and you've piqued mine. I have cousins who are retired, and they present information to schools, to school children, to, you know, we're a nonprofit organization, so if you ever wanted to speak more in depth with any of my cousins, I could contact them, because they probably know a little bit more, or maybe just as much, or maybe, but they do enjoy going to schools and speaking to the children.
Sure.
Because not a whole lot is mentioned, just a few lines here and there about her. And her name is always, and it irks me that in the museum in Goliad, at the little, her name is misspelled. There are a few articles of her own personal, you know, some hair combs, hairpins, and some things of hers, her veil. She was apparently, from what we know, she was very, very Catholic.
Okay.
Very, well, maybe not. I mean, if she was in this union without the benefit of marriage, but hey, I am not God. I cannot judge. She is my descendant. I come from her. What can I say? I'm not judging anybody, but apparently she was a very religious. And I mean, we all make mistakes. We're human, but I don't think of it as a mistake.
I don't either.
You know,
I don't either.
It was a union of love.
Things were different back then.
Yes. And
people's lives were shorter.
Yes. That's very true. And it was, I think of it as love. Because the love that she, what she had inside of her for helping these men who were, a lot of them surely die without her help. And it is so interesting, if you have ever gone to Goliad to see the reenactment, the last time I was there, it's been a few years, a young girl came dressed as her. Mm-hmm. A girl who was not Hispanic. And she came and introduced herself to the organization, and she said, I want to be like her. I want to dress like her. I want to pretend that I'm her while we're here. And can I sit at your meeting? Her parents were with her, and we said, yes, by all means. You know, anybody. The meetings, are, we have them under a canopy. They're open to whomever.
Right.
They're open to anybody. And I did not go to the last one that they had. They have one in March in Goliad, and they have one in November after the ranch hand breakfast, and they're always there. They have a canopy too. The organization, the Angel of Goliad Historical Descendant. Oh, I probably said that backwards. Daniel, help me out here, because I cannot remember. The AOGDHP. The Angel of Goliad Descendants.
Let me shorten it. It's going to take me a while.
We always have a canopy out there at the ranch hand breakfast every year in November. I think it's last weekend in November. I'm not sure. I haven't gone the last few years. But they're always out there handing out material.
About her.
About her. Just to inform the public that we're a nonprofit organization. We just want to bring attention to her good deeds. That's why the department, is it, what is it, the Department of the State that helps you? Is it the, you might know, Daniel, the one that'll help you put up historical markers, the Department of Transportation?
I'm not for sure.
I guess. There's a marker to, over here, right in front of, okay, when you reach the end of Santa Gertrude School, do you know right. where the
I know
Kingsville Record Office
yes,
is?
Yes, I know.
That historical marker.
Yes.
She camped there.
Oh, my goodness.
I believe her name is there.
Oh, my goodness.
Now,
I have to go look.
Yes, David and I, we didn't take that. Okay, this doesn't have anything to do with her, but I am very, very interested in old, dilapidated, rusted barns. I mean, authentic ones, not ones that were built 25 years ago.
Old structures.
Old structures.
Yes.
I love architecture, old architecture, old windmills. So we've been traveling in back roads that I didn't even know existed and taking pictures. I drive, David takes the pictures for me while I pull over, and we meant to take a picture of that one last weekend when we were coming back from La Bandera and Benavides and his little communities, and we didn't. So, but it's out there, because that's where she camped when they were on their way to Goliad. And she nursed and helped and de-shackled, unshackled. I'm not sure what the proper terminology is, but today's descendants are trying very hard. I have to hand it to my cousins. They're trying very hard to bring to light her legacy, which we're all a part of, bring to light her heroic, I guess you can call it heroic, her good deeds.
Right.
Just as a Christian woman, it didn't matter to her if the men were Hispanic or if they were Anglo settlers, if they were Irish, Native American, whatever. She was there to help, to nurse, to help. She helped the priest also, and it's in here in one of the stories. And another thing that I forgot to mention, is it okay to go back
sure.
a little bit?
Absolutely.
When my father, before he passed away, there was, in 2000, he passed away in 2001. This was the Field of Dreams reunion. They called it the Field of Dreams for the semi-professional baseball teams.
Very nice.
And I did not know that it was more than just the Cowboys. I just thought it was just the Cowboys. It was also the 7-Ups and the Lions. Now, Donovan Lopez is an author of Practice, Practice, Practice.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, he's didn't ask me for information, but I guess he spoke to somebody else about all of this. And so my father was awarded with they all were. Everybody was given a baseball and an authentic baseball. And I was able to get as many signatures as I could for my father, but I didn't get a whole lot. Theo Klaberg was there, took a picture with my father, he and my father, because Theo was there on behalf of his father.
Okay.
And I don't know if you heard of a distant uncle who recently passed away. He was the last cowboy of the King Ranch, Alberto Lolo Treviño. Okay, he's in the picture also with my father because he played for a very short time with them. And this was a roster of their semi-professional baseball teams. And the names are on here.
This will all add wonderful stuff to the archives.
Wonderful.
We have a couple of collections that touch on the Cowboys. We do. So, yeah. See, this will add more information.
Good. A lot of these are still living. I think, yeah. Johnny Pinchback passed away.
Do you remember your father saying anything about who decided to start the games or how they got started? Or was it just kind of a natural evolution of they like to go out and play ball on Saturdays or whatever? And
I think it was a big part of it was that. And I know that everything, their uniforms, everything was funded by the King Ranch. Because Don Ricardo and Don Roberto, they were very, very passionate about that. And I think it started out really as just the love of the game, just boys playing baseball. And not all of them were from the King Ranch. Some of them were from here from town.
Mm-hmm.
And they hung out, you know how boys will do, they hung out with some of the boys from the ranch. In those days, they didn't have Academy High School. They had their Santa Gertrude Elementary School on there, but then once you reached ninth grade, you were automatically bussed to Memorial.
Okay.
The kids from Laureles were bussed to Gillette, and then for high school, they were Yes, they were bused to Gillette, and then everybody was bused to H.M. King.
Okay.
And that's how it was in those days. But when my father turned 90 years old, and I didn't put this in the conclusion, I'm sorry, but David wanted me to mention this, because David was very close to my, both my boys were very close to my father, and I was very close to my father. I guess that's probably why I'm not too much of a good cook, because my mother tried to make me a cook, but I wanted to be riding horses with my father, because we had our two horses. My parents had a weekend ranch in Fremont. It was a weekend getaway. It was probably a getaway to get away from me, but I would tag along because I wanted to take care of my horses, and my father taught me everything he knew about horses. That was a specialty, but when he turned 90 years old, because he was born in 1905, and when he turned 90, the city commissioners, one of the city commissioners, Norma Nelda Alvarez, relative also.
Okay.
She typed up the, or the city secretary at that time, Diana Ramirez, typed up the proclamation. And we had a very big celebration.
Oh,
at,
nice, yes.
In the pavilion at DeClaverty Park for my father when he turned 90. It was a big thing. I mean, he lived to be 96.
He was loved, yes.
He was. Very well respected.
Yes.
I'm not saying he was perfect, because he wasn't. My father was the kind of man that, like my mother and my sister, is not living anymore, neither is my mother, but they used to always say that, my mother would say, gosh, we would be so rich if everybody who owed him money were to pay it back. And my sister said, oh, yeah, but my father wasn't like that. You could come up to him and say, Frank, I'm hungry. I need a burger. I need a cup of coffee. Whatever he had in his wallet, just give it to you. That's who my father was. Money didn't really, I'm not saying it didn't mean anything to him. It did, but
he shared freely.
There you go. Friends, everybody knew him. Everybody knew Frank Quintanilla. And those who didn't call him Frank called him Pancho. Pancho. Pancho.
When you were little, would you ride out on his horse with him at King Ranch sometimes?
No. I wanted to, and I couldn't understand why. I was so ignorant. He had a brother that still lived on the ranch at that time. In fact, it's one of that brother's sons that I need to, that you need to talk to, because he knows a lot more. But he's not going to tell you where the angel is buried. He won't tell you.
It's
okay. I'm sorry. He wouldn't tell me. So anyway, okay. That was then. This is now. I couldn't understand why we would go visit my uncle on the ranch every weekend. And as we were entering the ranch, you know, they didn't have all the security that they have now. You didn't have to go through all those gates. Not all those gates, but I mean that little stop there where the security little houses. I just couldn't understand. Like, there were so many so many horses. So many cattle. Why couldn't my uncle just give me one horse? That's all I wanted, was just one. But it took a few years before it finally hit me, and before it caught on that those were not his. You know, because I thought, well, we're coming to see my uncle. He lives here. All of this cattle, all these horses are his. Why can't I have just one horse? But my cousins, the Mendietas, there was a family of 9 of them. They would put me on their horses. A lot. They would take me. My father did too, but I should have brought the picture of me when I was about 5 years old. But
you can bring it to us. We'll scan it.
Okay. It's not one of the ranch horses, though.
Oh, that's all right.
But I can't wear boots now. I don't know if I shared this with you before, but I love boots.
I do
and
too.
I'm starting a collection of old boots, my father's boots. But do you wear boots, Daniel?
Yeah, I bought boots since coming to Texas. Yeah.
Well, if they ever get to the point where you're getting ready to throw them away, don't.
Okay.
I love old boots because I like to imagine where they've been, where they've walked, what they've stepped in.
Just
never know.
Yes.
The stories they could tell. They say those boots are made for walking, you know, like the Nancy Sinatra song. I say they were made for talking, maybe, if they could.
You're
what
right.
What would they say? But anyway, that's why I'm not a very good cook, because I prefer to be out there with the horses. And I got a very hard lesson the first time I got off the horse by myself. So I was old enough to manage the horse, and I just started to walk away. My father was like, hey, come back here. Come back here. Where are you going? On the bus. And I said, well, I'm going inside. No. And the horse? ¿Y el caballo qué? He's not going to groom himself. So that's when I learned, oh, there's a saddle blanket. Oh, you got to undo the stirrups? Oh, you have to brush him? Ooh. Oh, wow. And don't you dare let him drink water when he's all hot and sweaty. Not yet. You got to cool him down first. Oh, you know, I just thought, oh, it was so easy to just get up and on the horse and take off. No, I learned. No. No. And then the next time you're going to ride, you're going to saddle up. I said, oh, wow. Okay. But it was fun.
I have a question,
certainly,
too, about, you know, you said that your father's brother was still living on the ranch now, but your father had moved off the ranch into town with his family, right?
Yes.
So was there a time...
I didn't live on the ranch.
Okay. Was there a time that... how did that evolve where the people started to move off the ranch, you know, the families that had come with King, and because they were, King had always provided the house for him, the schooling for him, supposedly the food for him.
Some of the food, yes.
Okay.
From what I remember, it was once a month, and it wasn't because, like I said, I didn't grow up there. By the time I was born, my father lived in town already.
Okay.
And then he... after he left the ranch, and I believe it was the 1940s, I'm not certain. Might have been after the group dissipated, the King Ranch Cowboys baseball, I'm not sure. But then he went to work for the U.S. government, the civil service. Back then it was called a RADMAC, now it's called CCAD.
Okay.
But what was your question?
Okay, so how did it evolve that they could move off, or that their time was done, or?
I think it might have been, maybe the war had an effect,
probably
World War
did.
II. Finances, and also, yes, I remember from my relatives and friends who lived on the ranch that they did provide certain foods.
Right.
Once a month, twice a month. They had a commissary there.
Okay.
The building is still there, and I remember my father taking me in there. Whatever you bought there would be taken out of your paycheck. And it wasn't a big variety like you would get at maybe HEB.
Right.
It was just this brand of jelly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just say pineapple jelly or peach jelly, whatever. This brand of peanut butter, that was it. And it wasn't a whole lot of food that they would sell there. It was mainly... dry goods, I guess. Rice,
flour, sugar,
beans, there you go, coffee, mm-hmm, flour and sugar. And I remember shirts. It was khaki. It had just, you know, the khaki shirts, because he bought me one. And pants, you know, and it was mainly just, I guess, necessary commodities, maybe.
Interesting,
you know?
Yeah.
And there was no, the homes didn't have the telephones in those days.
Right.
So if you wanted to make a call, I guess you had to come to town. And, you know, the people would come to town anyway for, I think, other things, like other groceries, maybe.
Social,
and,
too.
Yes, social. Mm-hmm. And I know that they had a little mission, which I think that they still do.
A church on
a little church
the property.
On the ranch, a Catholic church. I don't know, but I think that that's a good question. That's a lot of food for thought there, because I just think that the war had something to do with it, World War II, but I'm not sure. Because I can remember when I was growing up, maybe I was already an adult. I don't know if it was back in the 80s or maybe back in the 80s. There was a time that people were worried because there was a threat that the Naval Air Station here in Kingsville was going to close.
Yes.
And a lot of congressmen fought to keep it open, and my father was like... It closed many times throughout the war.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? He said, yes, they always opened it back up again. He said, it was shut down a lot of times. And I said, wow, I never knew that. I don't know if it was before the war, after the war, there were times that they shut it down. And then they would open it again.
But, interesting. Do you remember anything, any stories your father might have had that talked about someone getting hurt and how they would be taken care of if they worked for the King Ranch? Because I've read that they did supply medical help to the families. Or do you remember any stories like that?
No, I don't. And that's very interesting, because I never thought to ask something like that.
Well, hopefully nothing ever happens, but you know things do.
Yes. I just know that a lot of... you know, some of the people were born there on the ranch at their homes, But as far as medical help, I really don't know. And that's a good question. I would have to ask some of my older cousins, because I'm a lot younger than some of them that grew up on the ranch.
Well, I think what you said is true, though. The war had a big impact.
I think it did.
On finances, and maybe people were given the choice then to leave, you know, or they probably already, after a couple of generations, could leave, but it was their choice, right?
Yes. And I think maybe people wanted to own something they could call their own.
Absolutely.
And I think maybe also, like, going back to the war, I mean, you know, throughout the United States, when men were marching off to war, I think that's where Rosie the Riveter came in, you know, we can do it. Mm-hmm. Because the women went to work in the factories and the warehouses, and then after the war, the men come back, and the women are told, thank you, but no thank you, we don't need you anymore. Go back to being Susie little homemaker, little Betty Crocker. Go back, you know, you can go back to tending to the family and your home. The men are back home now. I think that happened to a lot of women. At least that's what I've read. That happened to a lot of women. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of them lost their jobs, had to take those jobs to not only make the soup, but earn the soup.
Right.
You know, make the bread and earn the bread, buy the bread, break it and serve it. And then they're told after the war, okay, we don't need you anymore. The men are coming back to their jobs. You go back to yours.
I know.
So, I don't know. I think the war had a big impact on a lot of it. Maybe people just wanted to have a piece of land or something they could call their own. I don't know. A lot of people moving into town.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you've told us a wonderful stories about your family, and we would like to make copies of everything.
Certainly.
And is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your family before I turn off the recorder?
Oh, Lori, there is so much. There's so much to tell, and I don't want to just ramble on. I really did try to stick to my...
You did great.
Thank you. But I did try to stick to my outline, and you know, I really would like to make contact with Don Newcomb, because according to the internet, he's still alive, and he's 90 years old. I don't know where, but I don't know how to get in touch with him, but I'm sure there's got to be a way.
If we find out, we'll let you know.
Thank you, because I would love to hear his aspect of his experience here.
Right.
Whether it was a bittersweet one, or a good one, or not good one, but I just know that everybody was thrilled.
It would be very interesting to get an oral history from him of that time, wouldn't it?
I think so, too. Yes. A part of history that we can't do anything about. It was throughout the nation, and it was what it was, right or wrong, but I would still like to hear it. I think it would be nice. And I've done my best to pick and choose. Mostly everything that I have said was I've kept everything positive. There was only one negative detail that I can remember. But that's not for me to share.
It's your choice.
Yeah. I'd rather not.
Okay.
It was, and well, I won't mention names.
Okay.
My parents, one of the baseball players, awesome. I don't remember what his position was on the team, but he lived here in town. And he, if someone didn't go pick him up, he wouldn't make it to the game, because he did like to sometimes drink. And my mother would laugh, because she said he was a very nice man. She said, but your father and I made it a point to go pick him up. Or if I didn't go to attend the practices, because a lot of the wives would go, my mother said it was just fun, socializing with everybody there. She said, but this one had a penchant for drinking, and so she said somebody, and it was always your father and I, who would go pick him up at home and take him to practice, because if not, he wouldn't show up. But he was an awesome player, and he loved the team, and they loved him, and he's no longer living.
Oh.
But anyway, one of them that was, let me see if I can see the roster. One of them, is a cousin of mine, and I just recently heard, yeah, his name is on here. He's in the nursing home right now due to a stroke. And just this morning I was talking to a friend of his daughter and asking how he's doing. I guess I need to go see him myself. He just had the stroke about a week ago, or maybe less than 2 weeks. So he was on the team, and his name is on the roster. And he grew up on the ranch. And I don't know how much he would remember. But like I said, he's a cousin, and he's retired from the local school district.
Okay.
And I had been seeing him lately around town, but then I just recently heard, like I said, it's been less than 2 weeks. He had a stroke, and I asked, is he able to speak? And they said, yes, he can speak, but he's still trying to get it together. You know, he can walk a little bit. He has movement, and he can speak. And his mind is still recuperating. I'm sure it's not easy when you have a stroke.
Right.
Learning that from my second ex-husband, you know, the wiring inside gets a little bit twisted, and it takes a little bit of time to straighten things out. But
he'd probably love a visit.
Yes, I know. I try to make it a point to go to the nursing home to see elderly people that are there, because I think the plight of the elderly is, I won't go into that, but I think the plight of the elderly, I think it's a very serious situation. They have a lot to tell, and maybe it's because I love history, but I think these people have a lot of stories, and if somebody can just go, and I know that I promised an elderly man who is a distant relative, I'm going to have to look to see if his name, he's a twin to Lolo, who just passed away a few months ago. He's his twin. He had a stroke, and he's in the nursing home, and I promised him I would take my books of stories that must not die by Dr. Juan Sauvageau, who used to be a professor here in the 70s. And what Dr. Sauvageau did was travel to all the little ranching communities and speak to old people about stories about our culture, like La Llorona, like the Headless Horseman, all these stories that every culture has different stories of.
Local stories.
The boogeyman, you know, things like that. And I used to wonder when I was growing up that I would hear these things. Don't go by that creek, or on your way home, don't go by the river there, whatever, because she'll come out. La Llorona, which stands for the crying woman. And I've been telling the elderly man there in the nursing home, I'm going to come and bring my books and read them to you in English or in Spanish so that you can tell me your side of the story, what you grew up hearing. Because I think every culture, we all grow up hearing stories like that.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the families that are telling us to keep us in line, you know, or I used to think, well, maybe because my mother grew up on a ranch, but not the King Ranch. She grew up in a little farming communities in the area here. And I think maybe the families didn't want them to grow up and leave into the big, bad cities.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they wanted them to stay home, because I think the more kids you had, the more help you had.
Absolutely.
Around the farm or on the ranch or where, around the house, whatever. And my mother was the oldest of 12, six boys and six girls. And she... I think that's why, part of the reasons why she was such a good cook, because she was in charge of cooking for the youngsters, and she learned a lot from her brothers also, even though she was older for the longest time until boys came along. She was her father's right-hand man, so to speak, and then she could do simple things like she knew a little bit about plumbing, a little bit about electricity, but it was out of necessity too.
Right.
But anyway, I think that the elderly people have a lot to tell us.
I do too.
We can learn from them. I like that, and I need to do some more research.
Well, thank you very much.
You're
for
so
all
welcome
your stories.
To
we
you and to Daniel.
To
I want to say thank you to both of you. I hope I haven't bored you all.
No, not at all. No,
you know, and there's so much that I could say too, but I don't want to ramble. It's just so interesting. You know, all the different stories, just so much, and it's just I didn't bring it. Because it meant a lot to my mother, but I have a letter that Elenita Clayburgh Groves Alexander wrote to her in Spanish completely when my father passed away in 2001, because my father was given charge of her by her father, and her father told my father, don't you dare speak in English to her, only Spanish. So my father had to pick her up after school, take her home so she could change into her old clothes, take her to the stable, and show her how to saddle the horse, how to groom the horses, do all that. My father had a penchant for braiding the horses' tails.
Mm.
I would not do that. And he would tell me, come here and stand right here. No tengas miedo. Don't be afraid. But I was trembling. I just said, oh no, my stomach is not going to get kicked in by a horse. So he could not get me to stand right there where he was. And he would say, Cindy, come here. And you're going to, I'm going to show, no. So I did not do that. Now, maybe Elenita did. I don't know. She loved my father. My father loved her. It was like having another little daughter before I came along. So she wrote a very touching letter to my mother, pages that I still have. It was just so, it just meant a lot to me that this...
We would love to have a copy of it.
Okay. We'll this rich woman who grew up with every richness still thought so much of my father. And, you know, I have a cousin who works for her in Laurel, in Noria's ranch.
Okay.
And he works with her. He's the foreman over there. And, but it just, I didn't bring it. It was just...
It's another wonderful piece.
Yeah, it's very emotional, and here I don't even have it. I'm still getting emotional because she thought so highly of my father.
Yeah.
And it just meant a lot to her, to my mother, and to me. My mother kept that letter, and now it's mine, and it's going to be David's. And I should probably say it's already David's. I don't know where he put it up. And he knows where he's got it, though. He treasures those things also, and he doesn't always tell me where he keeps those things. But I guess it's for the best. It's okay.
He loves the history too.
He does. And next time I'll send it with him, or I'll tell him to, so you can make a copy of it.
Just shows how
I don't think she would mind. I don't think she would mind.
No.
She's still living. She just recently celebrated her, I think, 90th birthday.
I believe I met her at some function once briefly. She wouldn't remember me, but you know, she was there.
No, she wouldn't remember me either, but I'd have to tell her who I was. But she just thought so highly of my father.
That's good.
It's very, it's an honor.
Well, he did a wonderful service for them.
Yes, he did. They all do. All of our family, I think, has been very blessed, I guess you could say. For if Sebastian Quintanilla had not left Mexico and come over here with Captain King, you know, I think
your history would be different.
Yes, he started that legacy of from Spain to this side of the world.
Right.
So,
anyway, well, thank you both very much. It's
so
been
much.
A pleasure.
I've enjoyed it. It's been a pleasure for me and an honor. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.